Rain of Troy Hotline.
Alicia, Michael, what's going on?
We know you have takes. We have takes.
I'm actually surprised that your rant line, rave line, whatever, isn't completely full.
Why can't we just win a game?
Can I blame Michael Castillo for this?
Can I blame Bob Connolly for this?
Could I put on a zebra shirt and just go out there?
Scratch, claw, up against the wall.
Can't explain that what I'm feeling right now, guys.
Let's open up that rave line. Woohoo!
Oh, I can't believe USC is going to do the same thing again, year after year. Oh, no!
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Rain of Troy Radio, episode 410, coming to you after the 2021 Pac-12 Media Day in Hollywood. We're going to talk about it and look forward to the start of USC football here on this episode. As always, you can follow us on Twitter at Rain of Troy. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/Rain of Troy. Be sure to subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, Overcast, Google Play. Wherever you can find a podcast, we are there. Our email address is rainoftroy@fansided.com, and our phone number is 213-373-1USC. Second What's Burn Show. I'm your host, Michael Castillo, joining with my co-host here in the Rain of Troy studio in Los Angeles, Alicia Deratola.
Hello, everybody.
Hello. We are back. Of course, we were back last week, and more importantly, we say this every single year. We've been going to Pac-12 Media. This was my 10th Pac-12 Media Day, by the way.
No way. I think it's been that long.
This was like your 8th.
Jeez. No.
Because last year, there was not one
in person. Pac-12 Media Day.
So, 9th and 7th.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
Still.
Anyways, the point of all this is that we say it every year on the podcast. This is the unofficial start of football season.
Unofficially, yes. The signal has been lit. The flare has gone up.
And it is lit.
It's lit.
Fam, yeah.
It's litty. Litty, fam.
100%. They say fall starts when on Labor Day because you can't wear white after Labor Day. I say no, it starts when football season starts.
Yes, when fall camp starts.
When does football season start? Well, it should start that Saturday before Labor Day, right? No, it starts. Football season starts when Pac-12 Media Day happens.
Which is to say at the end of July.
Yeah, so it's fall. It's officially the fall.
It's officially fall.
Yeah. So our friend Simon Jabari from Traveler Hitch Thursdays, mm-hmm. who loves to whine mm-hmm. about how the Pac-12, not the Pac-12, all these...
College
football in general, does this thing called fall camp and holds fall camp in August, and it shouldn't be called fall camp because it takes place in the summer. It should be called summer camp, even though I told him that that's where you send a fat kid is summer camp. I can say that I've been sent to fat camp.
Well, see, the thing is, though, like, summer camps aren't just fat camps. There's a lot of varying kinds of summer camps, so...
Sure, but my experience with summer camp, not a pleasant one.
Oh, well, I'm sorry.
I used to have to go to Y camp.
I mean,
Y camp sucked?
I never went to summer camp, so maybe you were the privileged one that...
Never, ever?
Never, ever went to a summer camp.
You, my friend, are a lucky person.
It always seemed cool. The other kids at my school enjoyed it, I guess.
No, I hated it. Anyways, well, the point is, it's fall, baby.
It is.
The football season is officially begun because the unofficial start of football season is Pac-12 Media Day. And as we know, fall begins when football season starts. So it's fall. It's fall. That right there is the judge knocking it down. Fall.
That was the gavel?
Yeah. Fall.
I mean, I agree. I don't. Are you arguing with someone right now?
I'm arguing with our friend Simon, who gets mad that it shouldn't be called fall camp. It should be because it's fall, baby.
Well, okay. It's fall camp because it's in preparation for the fall, or it already is fall, or...
It already is fall because it's football season, which starts at Pac-12 Media Day in Hollywood this year at the W, across the street from the Pantages, By the way, I heard someone say pantages once. Drove me insane.
So, pantages. Like someone saying the 101?
Well, to be fair, I called the 101 freeway the 101 to screw with you.
Yeah.
On purpose.
So that's you're called saying, a troll. So you're saying because somebody said pantages and it wasn't like ironic or a troll, then that's the bad bit.
Pantages sounds like I don't want to.
I mean, it doesn't sound good. Like. It doesn't sound good. You no. don't want a pantages. Yeah.
No. No.
Yeah.
No.
Are we just delaying at this point talking about Pac-12 Media Day though? Because like the dirty secret of Pac-12 Media Day in this current era is that very little interesting things get said. Like, it's a great experience to go to Hollywood. I love the swag. This year they had, brookies? Were they brookies?
They whatever were they were called.
Brownies insanely with like a cookie good. On, like yes. a cookie baked on top. In like, by far, we've been going to Pac-12 Media Day for many more years than I realized. And like every year they do some sort of weird, you know, gimmick, like dessert kind of thing.
Right.
They've done ice cream that was good. They've done like donuts. They've done cookies. They've done all sorts of ice cream sandwiches. They've done all sorts of things. And they're all pretty good. This blows all of them out of the water. The brookies, I was skeptical because I don't think inherently combining two good things doesn't always make a better thing.
Yeah.
But this.
Brookies meaning brownies wow. and cookies. Imagine a muffin in which the stump.
Yes.
Is a brownie. And the top of the muffin, the top of the muffin to you,
like
is the cookie.
Like the muffin top. I don't get that. I never get your references, Michael. The muffin top is a cookie. Like, so like I had a chocolate chip cookie. You had a oatmeal raisin cookie. They had like snickerdoodles and other things. But like the muffin top is a cookie. And then like the muffin stump is a brownie. And like,
yeah.
Think of like the best chocolate chip cookie you've ever had in your life.
And the best
brownie. And then stick that on top of the best brownie you've ever had in your life. And that's yes. the brookie that we had.
Mind you, Domino's has this thing where it's like the marble brownie cookie thing. That is incredibly good. It's a combination of brownies and chocolate chip cookies.
Yeah.
But it's marbly, so it's both of them.
It's not.
This,
you literally get the best of both worlds because you literally, yeah. you get to like, break off the sides of the cookie and it feels like you're eating a chocolate chip cookie. The point being that brookies are my new favorite thing. Decent swag this year. Not gonna lie. I mean, it's pretty good.
We got blue block Pac-12 glasses.
Yeah, legit. We have little vials of like sunscreen and bug spray and hand sanitizer and after sun lotion and just a whole kit that's pretty legit. The usual pen. Great notebook again this year. Yeah, no complaints. The swag's good. The bags that they gave us, the little shoulder bags, pretty decent. I like them. So swag is good. The lunch, pretty decent. Probably better food than we've had the last few years. So good on the W for that.
Would you say it was a W all around?
It was a W. The venue, I think, was a W all around. I think you and our buddy Jake from the What's Bruin show would complain about the temperature of the main ballroom, which
a little warm.
Normally, little warm. The temperature of the main ballroom is somewhere south of sub-zero.
Right. Yeah, and which not always ideal south of the border, except if you're a robot, because this episode is brought to you by Manscaped, and our robots need to be prepared. And they can be with Manscaped for the summer. We're in the middle of the summer. Get ready for the football season when you got to be out there and all prepared with your Performance Package 4.0 from Manscaped, which has everything inside. The Lawnmower 4.0 trimmer, the Weed Whacker ear and nose hair trimmer, the Crop Preserver ball deodorant, and Crop Reviver ball toner, plus two free gifts, a Performance Boxer Briefs, and a Shed travel bag. That stuff will help you below the belt.
Yeah, and you don't have to worry about any nicks or cuts or anything like that because of a cutting-edge ceramic blade. on the Lawnmower 4.0. It's got a switch with a travel lock so that it doesn't go off crazily in your luggage. It's got an LED spotlight. It's got everything you could hope for in a trimmer.
Yeah, absolutely. And you can get it all starting at 20% off plus free shipping with the code FANSETTED20 at manscaped.com. That's 20% off plus free shipping with the code FANSETTED20 at manscaped.com. Achieve pubic glory this year with Manscaped, proud sponsor of the Random Troy Radio Podcast.
Yes, indeed.
Yeah. All right. Let's start talking about the news, shall we? All right, Alicia, the Pac-12 Media Day kicked off in the morning on Tuesday, bright and early, 8 o'clock. George Klyavkov, I hope I'm getting that right for the millionth time.
Klyavkov, yes, I think yeah. You got it right, Klyavkov.
Yeah. The Pac-12's new Pac-12 commissioner came out, and he was swinging from the hip, firing away, and I would say he did a pretty good job. He said the things that people wanted to hear Larry Scott say but never did. He came out and said, parity is good for having a lot of good teams. Having a lot of good teams is not overall good for the conference when you want to get into the playoff. He said that they are going to prioritize getting into the playoff over everything else. He was talking about wanting an expanded college football playoff. He talked about, he was asked about expansion. He said the conference doesn't necessarily need to expand right now, but they're also need to look at every option. He was asked about Big 12 schools that are now in limbo after Texas and Oklahoma have left, and could the Pac-12 scoop them up? He wouldn't comment on any school specifically, but noted that AAU accreditation is not a prerequisite like has been bantied about, citing that it wasn't a thing for Utah at the time when they were brought into the conference a decade ago. So overall, football, basketball, those are the priorities he set forth while still emphasizing the Olympic sports. It very much felt like a press conference in which somebody said, okay, don't do the things Larry Scott did and do the things that Larry Scott didn't. And that's what George K. went out and did.
Yeah, I mean, exactly. It was the opposite of a Larry Scott Pac-12 address at Pac-12 Media Day. He used the word hyper-focus on football and men's basketball, the revenue sports. He reiterated that several times, the revenue sports, the football and men's basketball are the priority. And he basically acknowledged that you need those sports to be strong in order for the conference to be strong, and that the Olympic sports and all of those other sports that the Pac-12 wins championships in every year, that those are benefited by football and men's basketball being big, by those injecting cash into the universities, into the athletic departments around the Pac-12. So it was a really welcome sort of tone that was taken from the Pac-12 officials. And it felt like a bit of a sea change. And one thing that I think that, Larry Scott got a lot of flack for all the time, but that I think people may have overlooked, is that the commissioner is really just a reflection of the presidents, of the people he answers to are the university presidents. Just like the NFL commissioner answers to the owners, the MLB commissioner answers to the owners, the NBA commissioner just answers to the owners. Well, it's the same situation with the Pac-12 commissioner. He answers to the Pac-12 presidents. So the talking points that Larry Scott was putting out there would have been driven in some way by the desires of those presidents.
Surely at least signed off on.
Yeah, signed off on, yeah. or whatever. So either way, this is good for the conference. Either George Klyavkov has come in and absolutely changed the minds of all of the Pac-12 presidents to be on board with this idea of the revenue sports have to matter and that they have to be strengthened and that we need to be pushing for all these things. Or the Pac-12 presidents have realized that they had been going about it all the wrong way and had their sort of come to Jesus moment and hired a commissioner who was ready to follow through on these new talking points that the Pac-12 has now clearly agreed on among the 12 presidents and athletic directors.
Yeah, the reality is probably somewhere in the middle.
Yeah.
I think that when you look at the changing of the guard in the Pac-12 with Dan Guerrero gone, Pat Hayden and Lynn Swann gone, Mike Bone in, and Jarmond over
at UCLA,
like, there's new ADs, Pat Chun at Washington State, new ADs throughout the conference, really, right? And that helps change kind of the perception, new blood, new outlooks. At the same time, George Kliavkov can come in and say, this is what I need to do in his interview, and win over minds that way. So it's a mixture of both.
Well, and if
it's not just one of those things.
If I'm
sure.
George Kliavkov or any other person who was interviewing for the commissioner job, I don't take that job unless they tell me that they want to put an emphasis on football and men's basketball.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
I don't want to deal with it, because if I'm coming in and I'm expected to negotiate a media rights deal for the Pac-12 networks, I need to be able to show that I have better products in football and basketball, and not just having to say, well, we're good in gymnastics, but that's not going to sell a media rights deal. And that's ultimately what George Kliavkov's job is going to be in. And it's a relief that the Pac-12 president seemed to, or at least the conference seems to be acknowledging that this is something that they have to do, and that this is the approach that they have to take.
Yeah, the only thing that I will say, and I want to stress this, I said this when Mike Bone got hired too, it is so easy to declare George Kliavkov the greatest commissioner in the world because he's not Larry Scott.
Well, I don't think that's what anyone's doing.
No, but
you need to be able to turn up to Pac-12 Media Day and say that football and basketball matter.
No,
like, that's it.
Yes, but what I'm saying is, it's not as simple as just saying that. Saying that is one step of the thing.
Well, yeah, of
course.
But
you need to talk about it and then be about it, too.
Yeah,
so,
but you can't be about it unless you're talking. Like, I don't believe you're going to be about it unless you're talking about it.
I agree.
So
I am just saying.
It's a step in the right direction. The big question that the conference is going to face, aside from how can they negotiate a media rights deal, but it's going to be, is it going to be a media rights deal for the Pac-12, or is it going to be a media rights deal for a Pac-16, a Pac-20, for a big Pac, or a whatever it comes out to be? Because expansion is going to be the thing that consumes the next, you know, or the foreseeable future.
Right.
Because the Pac-12 has a decision to make. And I thought it was interesting that Kliavkov said that they don't view expansion as strictly necessary. But they have had they've had interest from schools that are asking about the viability of them joining. And it's worth noting that he said that there's a high bar for entry, so they're not just going to let anybody in, but they're definitely going to consider some of these schools. And I think that this is going to be a really worthwhile debate to have, because I'm kind of on the fence on all of this. Like, I think that there is an argument to say, don't expand for the sake of expanding. If you're not going to get a Texas or an Oklahoma, don't bother adding Texas Tech and TCU. Like, those aren't big enough fish.
Right.
On the flip side, if the SEC is 16 teams and the Big 12 goes to, but the Big 10 goes to 16 teams, or
they're already at 14.
Yeah. If the other conferences are expanding, and you are going to stay pat at 12 and get sort of swallowed up at some point, or lose your sort of quote unquote Power Five status, you need to be very careful about that too. And there is something to having the Texas footprint in your media landscape. I think there's an argument for that being there. Is it a good enough argument to go through the whole expansion rigmarole? I don't know. But I think that both sides of this argument, I'd like to see it vigorously debated.
Yeah, okay. How do I put this? I don't think you should expand just to expand. I think that there's a way that the Pac-12 can expand and improve their stature. And to me, the only way to do that is to have some mega conference that is in partnership with the Big Ten. and you say, you know what, we're going to make a 26 or 28 team conference with the Big Ten, and it's going to be split in two. It's going to be like the American League and the National League, where the teams play very minimally, and they meet in the championship game that is at the Rose Bowl as a Rose Bowl proxy. It feels like history. Maybe you move Nebraska over to the Pac-12 side of it, so that way you've got Nebraska and Colorado back as rivals or whatever. I think that's the only play that sort of makes any sort of sense, because if the SEC is at 16 teams and the Big Ten holds firm at 14, what is the difference between being the Pac-12 or the Pac-14 with Texas Tech and Oklahoma State, or the Pac-16 with Texas Tech, TCU, Baylor, and Oklahoma State? Mind you, that includes two religious schools that the Pac-12 has never had.
My thing is, I would argue, and again, I'm not sold on any of this, but I would argue that those teams have proven they can be in a national, top 10 conversation. TCU has been up there. Baylor has been up there. Texas Tech has been up there. Like, those are teams that theoretically, from a football perspective, could add cachet.
Every one of them has been ranked number two in the last 15 years.
Yes.
At some point,
and
right?
I think half of them lost on that same weekend in 2007. So, like, but the point is that if you're trying to build your football brand, I think you would potentially be adding some interesting football pieces there. You'd be able to negotiate your media rights with Texas markets in mind, and you could potentially, like, instead of having, so here's the Pac-12's problem right now. The Pac-12's problem is that everybody is sort of mediocre, and you don't have anybody who's sort of taking a step above. So you're relying on, okay, so if Stanford's down and the Arizona schools are down and, the Oregon States and Washington States of the world are just kind of meh, and UCLA is UCLA and USC isn't like a top five team, you're sort of in this limbo where you're like, okay, so who are you going to rely on? Well, those are some more football centric schools that you could potentially rely on to be, well, these guys are going to be top 15.
Right.
So there is some cachet there that might make it worth it. I say might because I think you bring up a good point.
But it's not going to affect the bottom line.
Well, and that's the thing is, if the bottom line is...
The SEC is adding OU and Texas.
Well, and that's the thing. If the SEC is adding OU and Texas, that means that OU and Texas are not going to factor in as a Power 5 conference champion from the Big 12 that's taking one of the playoff spots. And if the overriding desire of the Pac-12 commissioner, which is what he stated, is to get playoff spots, right? And they're expanding the playoff from 4 to 50,000 or somewhere in between that, you don't necessarily need to be in a super conference to place your champion in the playoff. Your champion's going to end up in the playoff if you're the Pac-12.
But that argument, more teams or means more chances. But
I think staying pat at 12 is fine. But you need those 12 to be stronger than they currently are, because if you continue on this trajectory, you're going to end up being a group of five level where you can have an undefeated champion and no one's going to take them seriously. Like, that's the line you need to walk.
Again, that is the ultimate ridiculous example. You're never going to have an undefeated Power 5 champion.
No.
Not going to be taken
seriously. No, yeah. No, but are you Power 5? Like, how long do you retain being Power 5 if you don't get your act together on the football side of things?
Is SC in the conference? It's a Power 5 conference.
Well, yeah, that's fine. But my point is that if you wanted to strengthen in the short term, in terms of short term injection of strength in the football brand, I think you add the Texas schools. But you don't need to do that if everyone else is taking things more seriously.
See, the way I look at it, there's two possible scenarios going forward in the history of college football. Either you do get to the amoeba that is the weird Super League proxy NFL 2.0. You got 32 of the best programs, and you just take the top half of the Power Five. So, SC, UCLA, Oregon, Washington, ASU, Stanford, and that's it, right? Like,
yeah.
Those schools get in along with the best schools of the SEC, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever, right? And you end up with that idealistic view of what college football could be, right? That's one possibility. I don't want that possibility, but that's one possibility.
Well, you realize that's where we're headed, though, but because that's ultimately that's where Texas looks like and things are headed,
right?
Like Texas,
that seems more likely than anything else. Which means, why do you waste your time by going to the Pac-16 when that Pac-16 doesn't include Texas? It doesn't include Oklahoma. It includes Texas Tech, Oklahoma State, and potentially TCU and Baylor, two schools that do not jive with anything that you stand for academically. So, and not, I mean, not to besmirch Texas Tech and Oklahoma State, but they don't either.
Yeah.
And so you look at everything that this conference has stood for, and I get that football, that needs to be the focus. But it's not going to ever solely be that, as long as you have a conference with Stanford, Cal, number one public school in the world. They love to tell people
so
that, right?
So like, what matters more, that you put a bar on your entry for the Pac-12?
I don't think it matters more.
Athletics?
I think it's just a factor, right?
Right, but like academics, like Vanderbilt doesn't win more games in the SEC because they have good academics. Like, if you
right,
are
but
an
the
athletic,
SEC doesn't prioritize that.
Right, but
that
if you're an
stuff.
Athletic conference, if you are an athletic conference, that's not your remit. Your remit is not to be the top, research institutions
I,
in the country.
I differ,
don't know
though.
That that's
I,
your
I
remit.
Think that, I think the Pac-12, as it stands, they are like-minded universities that like to play athletics together.
Yeah.
Now, it's in their best interest,
yeah.
business-wise.
That's what I'm saying.
To be good and make a lot of money. And so
yes.
that's why, like, I think that it's
that's,
good
and
that
that's the benefit. No, but yeah. that's all I'm saying. The benefit.
But is that
what,
going to give you that much more money?
What you well, and that's the calculation that they need
it's
to do.
It's four more mouths to feed.
Yeah, and that's the calculation
so
that they're going to have to do.
So you're dividing things by 16 instead of 12. So then
right,
you're banking
you,
on making the, even more money. And you're talking about getting into the Texas market. Really? Texas Tech? Lubbock? Lubbock is the key to the Texas market? Are you kidding me?
Just being in Texas.
First of all, I understand the whole market
Texas
thing.
Tech is also the least of the things that I'm talking about.
No,
like,
I get that, but I, like, under, I understand
but my,
the
my
whole...
My point is, like, I agree with you that this doesn't necessarily pay off, but if you're the Pac-12, you cannot get left behind. You are in danger of being left behind. Because
by what? What else is happening?
By a super conference. Because maybe one day USC turns around and says, screw this, instead of going independent.
When that happens, you react to that.
Well, no,
you
have
get
to
ahead
no,
of that.
No, you have to be ahead of that before USC even thinks
right,
to leave for the
Texas
super conference.
Texas Tech and Oklahoma State and TCU and Baylor does nothing to prevent that.
Well, I don't.
It does nothing to get on the level of
staying
the
on the
SEC.
Pac-12 doesn't.
It does nothing to get on the level of the Big Ten.
Staying as the Pac-12 doesn't necessarily keep you from that path either.
No,
this is a
but it allows you flexibility going forward because this is clearly a changing landscape.
Well, why wouldn't you have flexibility? I mean, it's not like anybody is going to stick around
like,
with the...
Why are
with,
you rushing to a decision to just grab
because
up
there are going to be four Big 12 orphans sitting out there, floating out there, and somebody's going to have to do something with
just
them.
Just because they're orphans doesn't mean they're worth saving.
Well, somebody's going to have to make that decision. And all I'm saying is I would be very curious. The Pac-12 is correct to keep their options open and do a
yes.
cost-benefit analysis. And I don't know
I
what
agree.
That cost-benefit analysis is going to come. They could come back and say, you know what, our media rights deal is going to increase significantly if we go ahead and pick up those schools. Or they could come back and say, you know what, our media rights deal isn't actually going to change at all by picking up those four schools and let that govern it. But like, the point is that there is a universe in which picking up the TCUs of the world might do you some good because you're trying to build legitimacy as a football power.
Getting
and you can't
Texas
rely on
Texas Tech is going to be the what makes the Pac-12 legitimate.
TCU is a strong program. Baylor is a strong program. Texas Tech has a brand. Oklahoma State is a strong football program. Like These are not, this is not the bottom dwellers of the Big 12. Those programs are all better than ASU and Arizona right now. They're better than Washington State and, well, maybe not Washington State, but they're better than the brands of Oregon State and Cal. So if you're trying to build a football brand, if you're trying to sell your Pac-12 network as a football product, then yes, maybe there are, maybe ESPN or CBS or one of those things does want to have Texas Tech and TCU and Oklahoma State and Baylor on the board. I don't know. I think there's a very distinct possibility that might be the case.
I'm not disparaging the idea that bringing those teams makes improves what you have. What I'm saying is, compare it to the SEC adding Texas.
You're
and
not.
Oklahoma.
You're not going to come. You're there. There no, is no. Like, you've lost Oklahoma and Texas. That right. That ship is right. gone. So
which
you
is
can't,
which is why I think you have to you wait can't, for the ultimate answer. And the ultimate answer is buddying up with the Big Ten, or
but the Big Ten
or hoping that some stupid super league comes.
The,
to
the Big Ten has already said they're not interested in expansion.
No, but they could be interested in a partnership, and the partnership could be something that includes media rights. Like this thing, this whole thing has plenty of
yeah, but we don't even know the timeline on the Big 12 yet. This could happen in 2025, and at that point, maybe you will have explored
more,
all your options.
More power to what I'm saying.
Yeah,
like,
no,
I just don't understand.
I am
like,
not saying that USC that the Big 12
no,
the Pac 12 should turn around tomorrow and add these schools. All I'm saying is I think there is a world in which adding those schools is the best move for the Pac-12.
Surely there could be a world where that
yes, that's all I'm saying. That's all I'm saying.
I don't think it's a likely world to exist.
Well, but it's a potential world to exist.
Sure. What do you guys think? Should the Pac-12 expand and bring in some Big 12 leftovers or not? Should the Pac-12... stay put? Should they look for different options? Should they butter up the Big Ten and talk about this partnership? What is the alternative? We want to hear what you guys have to say. Email us, randifftroy@fanside.com. Be sure to call us, 213-373-1872. The other thing to get into from Pac-12 Media Day was USC having a chat. Clay Helton was there along with Keaton Slovis and his favorite wide receiver, Drake London. You were with the Clay Helton presser. I went over to where Keaton and Drake were. What was your takeaway with Clay Helton and company?
Have you ever heard a Clay Helton press conference, listener, dear listener? Have you ever heard it?
I believe so, yeah.
Close your eyes and imagine that press conference. Now repeat it 50,000 times over 5 years.
I get it, yeah.
And that's the press conference that we heard at Pac-12 Media Day.
All right.
Literally, I mean, like, and I don't know. I don't want to be unkind to Clay Helton because, as I reiterate, every time we talk about him, I think he's a very nice man. But, like, if you've heard one press conference at this point, you've heard them all. And maybe if this was, like, the first press conference, it would have been impressive, but now it's just tired. It's just tired. Like the whole deal is just tired. There's nothing to glean. Nothing to. How long were those media sessions? 30 minutes?
Something like that.
Yeah. Literally zero to glean. Zero to glean of anything. There was no injury updates. He talked about how the defense is had a chance to sort of pick up the. The attitude of Todd Orlando, which we've right. heard before, so I don't know if I'll believe that. I mean, he talked about how Keaton had a chance to continue developing. Well, you've heard that before, so whatever. I mean,
I'm not trying to cape here.
He
but
big upped
I,
the
I,
strength and conditioning, which we've heard that before. So
I don't know.
I don't know what he's supposed to say.
Well,
so it's
well,
like
yeah,
I'm not
well,
accusing
like,
him of right. like doing something wrong. It's just. It's just very tired at this
right.
point.
And what I would say is I don't know how, like, last season set up a situation in where, I mean, apart from winning the final game against Oregon, obviously, SC was put in a situation where it was going to be difficult to win the offseason after that. In the sense of they only had so many games to play. They played a season in which, in a lot of ways, it was the same old USC. In a lot of ways, it wasn't. They had some fight at the end of games and pulled games out in spectacular fashion that lesser teams haven't done. But they weren't a team that was, you know, worthy of going undefeated in the regular season like they did, a shortened one, albeit at that. But there were so few games, so little opportunity to actually get the monkey off their back, right? To prove the all these things wrong. And mind you, with all the minimal amount of changes that they had, we were always doubting that they were going to be able to do that anyways. So you include minimal changes. You look at a season in which they only played a handful of games. It was always going to end up a case where it was going to be unsatisfying in some sense. And it ended up being an unsatisfying season to the max, right? And so going into the season, I don't know how you can look at these sort of things and come up with a game plan of what to say that is satisfying. And Keaton Slovis was asked about things, and he talked about, well, you know, this year I'm, you know, trying to get back to improve his velocity and his accuracy, pretty much admitting that the Holiday Bowl injury against Iowa at the end of 2019 was still a lingering factor in last season, which I think kind of gives some hope, because if he can, you know, truly,
if they're finally ready to admit that.
Yeah, a little bit late, right? But if that's a thing where he can get back to the level that he was and get back his accuracy and his velocity and all those kind of things, that's a big step forward. But at the same time, like, again, you only had so many games to talk about. Like, this is a situation.
This is a no-win situation for USC, no. And we knew this going into media day, and we've known this going into signing day. We knew this going into spring camp. We're knowing this going into fall camp. There's a no-win situation until you get to a point where you can actually win games. And right. It's not like even week one is a no-win situation because you beat San Jose State and people are going to go shrug, whatever. Week two is a no-win situation because you're going to beat Stanford. No one's going to care. Like, you literally have a no-win situation every week from now until
Notre Dame.
Notre Dame. Yeah.
Yeah. And then people are going to be like, yeah, but Ian Book's not on the team anymore.
Yeah. And so then it's going to be a no-win situation until you get to the Pac-12 title game. And then. Right. And then you got to sort of exercise a demon against Oregon, yeah, potentially.
But like, just to the point where they have to
you have
prove
like two,
things,
you have two,
right?
Opportunities to win between now and December, the first weekend of December. Literally two opportunities to win. And every other week from there in between is an opportunity to lose. So, like, it's
a dour way to look at it, but it's the way things have been set up when, you know, you're so far deep into a regime that a lot of people look at, and we've mentioned a bunch of times before, it's kind of gotten stale, even though SC has pieces that are worth genuinely being excited about, like, yeah, Drake London and Drake Jackson and IPM and Keaton Slovis when he's healthy and Keontae Ingram. There's a lot of players to feel good about.
Yeah.
It's just a situation where you're like, are they going to get the most out of all those players consistently? That's the question. And I think it's a little bit of a bummer that SC's in the situation where they have so many players to be excited about, and yet there's just this perpetual, like, meh-ness around everything.
Well, yeah, and I think you see that in the Pac-12 media poll, because the Pac-12 media poll picks USC to win the South, but Oregon to win the conference. And, like, I think USC winning the South is, like, almost like a default vote. It's just like, well, you're going to pick ASU? They're in turmoil. Who knows what's going on with them? You're going to pick Utah? I would bet on Kyle Whittingham, but there's so many unknowns for them. Are you going to pick UCLA? They'd be a bit of a dark horse coming through. So who are you going to pick? Well, USC has Keaton Slovis, the first team preseason All-Pac-12.
Isn't this the craziest thing, that I think there's intriguing options in the Pac-12 South. I genuinely think it's going to be a fascinating division.
Yes.
Because I don't know what to expect against UCLA. UCLA could go 10-2. They could go 2-10. And I wouldn't be shocked either way.
Yes.
And you can say the same thing about ASU. You can almost say the same thing about Utah.
It's entirely possible that ASU, Utah, and USC are all just sort of like in that medium, like eight. Was it 2013 that everyone was 8-4 and it was like a super tiebreaker to decide who would go? Like, that's what I feel like this year is going to be. Everyone's just going to be 8-4 with
it. But the irony is that despite all of that, despite there being, you know, upshots at UCLA and ASU and Utah where you can look at and talk yourself into picking those teams, at the end of the day,
USC is 1,000%
the more reliable team out of any of those.
Yeah.
And this is an SC team that we talk about is not reliable.
Right.
Like, that's how weird the Pac-12 South is.
Because USC has the star talent, but let's talk about the most damning thing from Media Day from Tuesday. What do you think was the most damning thing from Media Day? The All Pac-12 first and second teams and honorable mentions. How many USC offensive linemen were included in any of that?
Zero.
USC returned 4 veteran starters, multi-year starters on the offensive line. And I believe the only offensive lineman mentioned on the all-conference team was an honorable mention for Andrew Voorhees. That's it. Like, that is an indictment and a half of USC's offensive line.
Yeah.
Because USC returning 4 veteran starters, and none of them, only one of them is worthy of an honorable mention at best. That's why there's skepticism around USC. That's the issue.
100%. Yeah.
Because you got the first team quarterback, you got the first team wide receiver, you got first team edge rusher, you got, I think, second team safety, first team DB, like corner and Chris Steele. Like, you've got skill position dudes that it's very easy to pick USC to win the South. But then you look deeper at some of the key positions and you're just like, geez, that's a problem. Like, that's an issue. And, you know, for all we know, those guys are going to prove everybody wrong and turn out perfect under Clay McGuire. I wouldn't bet on it, but, you know, maybe they find their groove. But, like, until they do, you can't bet on USC. And that's causing this whole offseason to have like a, just a, I mean, how do you even get excited about anything?
Is this the least excited you've been about a football season ever?
Ever, yes. Ever, yes.
And that's on top
I'm
of,
not
like,
excited about this at
the
all.
COVID season.
The COVID season, I was at least excited about, like,
There was anticipation of
what's it going to look like?
Sure,
like,
yeah.
You know,
I don't think
what
I've gone into
take?
An off season or gone into a season because, you know, it's an unofficial start of football season.
The offseason's over.
Yeah, fall is here, baby. I don't think you can look at it and say this is one of those off seasons where you're just champing at the bit to get out there, which is sad too, because you had the COVID situation.
Yeah, we should all be like just hyped to get back to a normal football season.
Right. And
but what is there to get hyped? I mean, there are individuals to get hyped about, but there's just 100%. Like a shadow hanging overhead that's like, well, I'm not even going to get to enjoy the best of Keaton Slovis and Drake London, so, because they're going to be limited by the sort of albatross hanging around the neck of this entire program. So, I mean,
pessimistically, so
I don't want to be, but, like, again, I can't muster excitement about this season. I'm still going to watch. Still gonna, you know, but that's the other thing. It's like the schedule isn't all that exciting. Like, it's just very meh. Like,
yeah, there isn't a big out of conference game to get excited
the
about.
The biggest Notre Dame, but I can't even get excited about Notre Dame because I don't think it's gonna go well. So,
we've talked about this before, but Notre Dame is one of those games where I don't look at them as a...
It's not an out-of-conference game.
No, I don't look at them as an out-of-conference game because they're just always on the schedule.
Yeah, it's like an afterthought. Weird afterthought.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, 100%. So, anyways, we got some mailbag stuff to get to, so let's get to that up next.
You've got mail.
All right, Alicia, let's go to the mailbag. We got a couple of voicemails. The first one comes from Michael in Iowa.
Hey, guys. This is Michael in Iowa, formerly Idaho. Just called out for my congratulations to both of you. I was startled but not surprised as much as you guys are. I think of you guys as a couple anyhow. Anyhow, the question I have in terms of the NIL is what's going to be the impact on the team when some players have and some players don't? It would seem to me it's going to reflect society in that you've got the haves and have-nots, and if the haves don't hand any money down to the have-nots, that things get pretty divisive. Anyway, that's all I got. Looking forward to the season, even though the games for me are going to start later. Take care. God bless. And again, my congratulations to both of you. Bye-bye.
Thanks so much, Michael in Iowa. Of all the states you could have moved to, Iowa from Idaho.
I hear Indiana's next. I
feel it works. Yeah, man, maybe.
Perhaps Illinois.
Adding a few syllables there for Indiana. Illinois would work. Yeah. But yeah, thanks for calling and thanks for your kind words. I think that there were already haves and have nots in college football locker rooms. So I'm not sure. I mean, this obviously takes it to another level, but I don't think that it's the kind of thing that's going to cause too much. I mean, you're always going to have people who can't handle other people around them having something that they don't. Like I said, I think that already existed. And I think because of the way that NIL works, those opportunities will be available to guys if they want to go out and get them. I think that if, you know, you can now start your own YouTube channel, you can now be proactive with your branding. And for some guys, that's going to cash in big time. But for some guys, it's not. And I think that for the most part, people deal with that. And it's not going to like cause a major problem that we notice it. Like I said, that kind of there already were haves and have nots in locker rooms. So,
yeah, 100%. I mean, because, you know, guys were getting paid under the table throughout college football. And that was just something that had always been a thing. Bagmen and the like. Plus, I mean, the great thing about college football is it is the unifier. It is a unifier of people with a ton of diverse backgrounds. And it's all about putting those things aside for the betterment of the team. So inherently, college football is about overcoming those kind of things. The awkward thing I thought was when Keaton Slovis and Drake London were together with their media availability, there were a million questions about Keaton Slovis's NIL deal with Clutch Sports to be his representation. Clutch Sports, who famously represents LeBron James. And no questions for Drake London about anything regarding him. And it's like, Drake London is every bit as marketable as Keaton Slovis is. So it's all about time and space and all those things and when it all comes to be. Keaton did say that football is his top priority, and so don't expect to hear more about the NIL stuff from him, because he's going to be focusing on the on-field product, and there's going to be probably plenty other players who look at it that way, who might not take every second to optimize every moment of their brand, because we've seen recruits like that. There's recruits who just want everything to be over, and there's recruits who milk every moment of the attention because that's what they enjoy. Different strokes for different folks, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, all of these guys are on different career paths. Some guys are, speaking of just haves and have-nots when you think of families, I think some people like Keaton Slovis or other guys that have maybe stable family wealth to settle back on don't need to be as aggressive in pursuing NIL deals because their comfort from that level won't be impacted. There will be some guys who have to be super aggressive with NIL deals because it's about feeding their families, you know? And those are the kind of things that I think are just a reality. And I think that you would expect people to be able to handle that reality. I think that that's going to be the case. I think, like I said, maybe there's few instances where this becomes an issue, but for the most part, people will have to handle this reality, and I think people are capable of handling this reality.
I always think of when players leave to the NFL, it is rare for anyone to besmirch the name of anyone going to the NFL. That's why it was such a big deal when Pete Carroll did it about Mark Sanchez, right?
Yeah.
And yet, you look at the players, and the players are always like, oh yeah, go get yours, go get yours, go get yours.
So yeah.
That is very much a mentality amongst the players. So I don't think there necessarily is going to be jealousy about that. And anything that could arise as an issue, to me, is a symptom of something else. If there is some player who gets a bunch of endorsements and it all goes to their head or whatever, in this hypothetical world that you'd see like on TV
on a CW
or whatever.
Show?
Yeah, yeah, like a CW show. Like, to me, that is indicative of different types of leadership problems that could happen regardless of money being involved.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. And that's, again, those are things that are pre-existing in the sport. And also, I mean, there is a great equalizer in that, I mean, theoretically, everybody who's in college, who's on a team, is going to a university with the intention, hopefully, of getting their degree, which means that financially there's a light at the end of the tunnel, even if you're not making big NIL deals, because theoretically you'll have a college degree and doors opening for that reason.
Yeah, 100%. Let's go to the next voicemail, which comes from our pals in Frisco, Texas.
Hey, Michael and Alicia. This is Cameron from Frisco, Texas. I'm glad you're still doing well. I know it's been a few months since we last heard a podcast, and really appreciate that we got another podcast this past week. Glad you guys are doing well. Congratulations, Mike and Alicia, on your engagement, and cannot wait for the wedding to come soon. Just have a couple questions I want to ask you. With the big announcement that Oklahoma and Texas did not renew their contract with the Big 12 and then likely going to the SEC, what should the Pac-12 do? Should they start to think about expanding to 16 teams? And if so, which teams should the Pac-12 consider expanding their conference to 16 teams? Also have another question I want to ask you guys, considering since you are big fans of Formula One, what were your thoughts on the third season of Formula One, Drive to Survive? Appreciate it. Fight out. Beat the Spartans.
Thanks for calling, as always. Love hearing from you guys.
Cameron's the best.
Yeah, yeah. Frisco. Reppin' the Frisco.
Shout out to Hutchins.
Shout out to Hutchins, exactly. We had that big conversation that we had, Michael. But let's sort of just lock down our opinions here. I think, you know, gun to my head right now, I would say that the Pac-12 should stay pat at 12 teams and just put the focus on maximizing the opportunities for those 12 teams. Put your focus on making sure that Oregon and USC are as powerful as they can be. Put your focus on making sure that your second tier teams, the Washingtons and ASUs and Stanfords of the world, can be in the mix of top 15 teams. Just give the current schools the as many resources as you can possibly do. Stay pat unless there's a major sea change, unless something else changes the equation. That would be my best guess. Like I said, if they do a cost benefit analysis and decide that that the media rights deal will be heavily improved if they have those Texas schools involved, then I think I change my tune. But short of the evidence that that's going to happen, I think you stay with 12 and you just sort of try to be proactive as possible with opportunities. Right. Because basically where the Pac-12 failed on this front, on the Texas-Oklahoma front, and quite frankly, I'll just put it out there, I think Texas and Oklahoma are making a mistake. I think they are trading in their sort of elite status in the Big 12 for run-of-the-mill status in the SEC. That's just my personal opinion. But they started having this conversation with the SEC, you know, back-channeling, behind closed doors. Like, where the Pac-12 failed is they didn't catch a whiff of this. Where the Big 10 failed is they didn't catch a whiff of this and try to get in and create their own scenario. So the Pac-12 needs to keep you know, keep an eye out for other opportunities and pounce the next time it happens. Be proactive in that sense. But for now, stick with 12. That's what I would say.
I agree.
Yeah, we agree.
Basically what I was saying.
I mean, really? I wasn't disagreeing with you. I was just...
I know.
I'm willing to say that there's more going on there, too.
For sure. Now, we want to get to the F1 question, but we will have to wait just 1 second because we got a question on Patreon from Dan.
Yeah, Dan says, what is the death of the Big 12 going to mean for non-conference game scheduling across college football? And thank you for the question, Dan. I think this one's interesting because there are a lot of heavy-hitting non-conference series that have been set up over the last few years in response to the college football playoff and the committee and wanting to build resume and be able to have a schedule that you're not getting knocked by the committee. But if you're in the SEC... with Texas and Oklahoma in the fold, do you really need to take those out-of-conference matchups?
Well, knowing the SEC in their MO, no, because...
Well, it's funny because they just changed their MO, and now they're being incentivized to not do it again.
And now it's going back the other way, but I don't know. Okay, I'm torn now that I think about it, because there's more playoff spots... So you're playing for rankings just as much as anything else. So maybe at the end of the day, it all sort of cancels out. I think the biggest thing, and I know this isn't necessarily the spirit of the question, but Texas has deals with SEC teams. They're supposed to play Alabama in 2022 and 2023.
That's off.
Well,
I mean, could it be? I mean,
I think those games might still go ahead because if they're still in the Big 12. I kind of expect the Big 12 to cut them loose sooner than the 2025.
I would be shocked if they wait until 2025.
No, I agree too. So, like, it'll be interesting to see what happens with those games. Texas also plays, let's see, Georgia in 2028 and 2029, Florida in 30 and 31. So, these teams are already out there on their schedules. It's going to be more openings, which... I almost wonder, does SC benefit by those SEC games being taken off like Texas's schedule?
And
Oklahoma, I think, has a deal with Alabama, too, if I'm not mistaken. So, like, do those things get repurposed, or does the SEC add a conference game and then take away from what they're doing out of conference? Like, I don't know. It's going to be interesting to see how it all comes to be, whether it be the expanded conference in addition to the playoff, how it changes the mindset there.
Yeah, and I don't know that I've seen a realignment sort of scenario where people have a good grasp of where will Oklahoma and Texas fit into the SEC? How will they reorganize their divisions? It's going
to
be...
The one I saw had Alabama and Auburn going to the East.
Okay. And then plugging in Texas and...
I think it was Missouri.
Oklahoma in the West.
Missouri goes to the West.
Yeah.
Along with the new additions.
Right. You would imagine, right, that those series between Texas and Oklahoma and SEC teams are off because now those are going to be part of the conference slate. And so the question really becomes, is the SEC still going to have that same scheduling, still have those same scheduling parameters? Because Alabama theoretically doesn't need to schedule a program like Texas or Oklahoma.
Right.
Because they don't need to replace those series.
I don't know, maybe. The other thought, I can't imagine this ends up being the case, but I guess, there is precedent for this. Is it possible that those games go through as non-conference conference games?
Well, I was going to ask that.
Because I want to say Cal and Colorado had games, in like 2013 so or something like that. That was after, they were scheduled before Colorado entered the conference, but they still played them, but they just didn't count them as conference games.
Well, especially if they're not in the same division. So if you think of it as like a non-conference in conference, so it wouldn't count towards your conference schedule, but you'd still get to play them that season. I could see Texas and Alabama wanting that still, depending on Now, you don't, if you're Texas and Oklahoma and Alabama, I don't know that you want to play twice in a year. So, like, maybe it depends on the, maybe they rearrange those dates depending on the cycle, the new cycle that gets created from the conference. But it's, it, but again, this is all, it's all very hard to tell until we have some actual details on A, when will Texas and Oklahoma enter? And B, how will the division shake out? What will the scheduling look like in the conference to figure out what's going on outside the conference?
Yeah, I don't know. It's going to be something that's going to be interesting to keep an eye on. But that'll wrap up the football side of the mailbag. Thanks, as always, for the questions. Email address is randoftroy@fansite.com. Phone number 213-373-1872. Lisa, we've got to go back to Cameron's call, in which he asked us about season 3 of Drive to Survive. We were all excited. This was the first season in which we watched as it was released, a season in which we knew what had happened in real life, because we got into F1 last year after season 2 of Drive to Survive. So this was more of a natural look at it for season 3 of Drive to Survive. What was your takeaway?
Okay, my first takeaway is that it was still very well done, still supremely enjoyable. I will say that I enjoyed not knowing anything about F1 and watching those first two seasons, or not anything about F1, but not knowing the storylines of the season, because knowing the storylines of the season, then there was some, like, I couldn't suspend my disbelief with the storytelling.
Yeah.
There was an episode that was particularly egregious to me, where
the
they
signs
where they tried to
where
they tried to manufacture this rivalry between Carlos Sainz and Lando Norris when we
and
literally,
I don't doubt that rivalry existed.
Oh, I think
but
rivalries
like not to the extent that
rivalries
that
certainly
the
exist, but we
to.
Also went through the entire season seeing them still very firmly in a bromance. And like the show tried to make it out to be like that bromance is now broken or something. It was just like, hey, you guys are being overdramatic, and I get that you have to fill something and you're limited by COVID. And maybe that might be the explanation for all of my complaints from the last season, is that COVID meant they didn't get to be there every race weekend. They didn't get to have, like, they weren't with Mercedes for the most juicy Mercedes storyline of the dang year. So we didn't even get very much about George Russell and the catastrophe in Bahrain, or what was it, Sakir?
Sakir,
the
yeah.
Sakir Grand Prix. So, like, that was disappointing to me, but aside from...
We didn't get any of the Hulkenberg COVID stuff?
We didn't Hulkenberg COVID stuff. We didn't, like, the things that we didn't get loomed over that season. And again, it could be COVID. It could also just be, now that we know all the storylines, we're watching it with a more critical eye instead of just enjoying the storytelling.
Right.
But objectively, the storytelling is still very good.
Yeah.
And I thought that the episode about Grosjean's crash...
A+.
I thought was very emotional.
Ferrari episode? A+.
The Ferrari episode was, yeah. So, like, it's still, it's a very, very, very well-made show. It wasn't the strongest season, and that might be a me problem. That might be a COVID problem. That might be a whatever problem.
Yeah, I look at Drive to Survive, like, you just have to understand what it's doing and what it's there for. One of my frustrations with F1 fandom are the people who, look at Drive to Survive as, like, an evil, and I think that's a terrible way to look at it, because it's bringing so many new eyeballs into the sport. Not just American eyeballs, surely a bunch of Americans, but a bunch of people from around the country and around the world that are being able to watch Drive to Survive and now have a tangible grasp of the sport. Think about how many people you might know that have watched Drive to Survive that now have an opinion about Lando Norris and Max Verstappen and Lewis Hamilton and so on, that you didn't think had that opinion a year ago, because maybe they didn't know those people existed, right? I certainly am one of those people. I got completely into F1 as a result of the video game and Drive to Survive. Both of those things have got me completely addicted.
And now, I mean, and literally you are a test case for what F1 wants from Drive to Survive, because you now have a subscription to F1 TV.
Yep.
And you...
I watch the F2 races.
You
watch the F3 races.
You
I'm
are
a
now,
sicko.
You are now, you know...
Play F1 Fantasy?
Yeah. You're now buying the F1 video game. You're now buying F1 merchandise. You know, you're now like, if ever an F1 race comes to the US and it works out with our schedules, we'll be there. So they're gonna make ticket sales off of us. If you're an F1 fan, and this is one of my annoyances, this is not just F1 fandom, this is all sports fandoms, this stupidity of the bandwagon fans. Like, get off your freaking high horse about bandwagon fans. It's good. The more people that like your sport, the better. The more people who support your sport financially, the better. If people weren't into your sport, if your sport was dying, that would be very, very bad. You want your sport to have growth. You want your sport to be spreadable in that sense. And that can only be a good thing. So get off your high horse about, you know, true fans and bandwagons and all that kind of stuff. Like,
the thing about bandwagon fans is that might be how someone starts, but it's about how you keep them.
Yes.
So, okay, someone wants to start as a bandwagon fan, fine. We've all started as a bandwagon fan of something.
Yes.
Now, keep us as a fan. And if you keep us as a fan, then we're no longer a bandwagon fan. You're only a bandwagon fan when you only care about things that are winning.
Yes.
When, you know, you're talking
but things
about, like,
that are winning draw people in, and that's how you create lifelong fans.
Like, if you're a Bulls fan because of Jordan, you weren't a bandwagon fan.
Yeah.
If you're a Bulls fan because of Jordan and then became a Laker fan because of Kobe, and then you became a Heat fan because of Dwayne Wade, and you just, like, kept changing your teams based on who was in front, then you're this front runner bandwagon. But if you became a Bulls fan because of Michael Jordan and that was your team,
and now you're
forever
a Bulls fan,
then that was just your entry point into the game, which is a different thing.
You're a Cubs fandom. You grew up watching. You're a Cubs fan.
I cannot possibly be a bandwagon fan.
No, that's what. But what I'm saying,
they don't exist.
There's all sorts of bandwagons because the you would not be a Cubs fan except that WGN broadcast Cubs games in Los Angeles.
Right.
So the Cubs being in bed with WGN brought fans from Los Angeles into the Cubs fold. I mean, it's not the same kind of bandwagon, but you're only there because WGN.
And I'm not alone. Like, almost every Cubs fan I know that's not based in Chicago has the same upbringing as that.
Yes. So it's
the same thing.
You have to find any way possible to catch people. Any way possible. And if you spurn those opportunities that you have to bring fans in, then you are being very short-sighted and narrow-minded. Yeah.
So my complaint, to go back to the F1 thing and Drive to Survive, are the people who think that Drive to Survive is terrible because they do things like making preseason testing sound like it's a competition, and they sometimes can over-exaggerate things like the Lando Norris versus Carlos Sainz thing. And because they do that, then that proves that they are bad and they're only bringing in bad fans. Like, no. Like, they can... It's all about understanding what it's for and what it's doing. And if you know that they exaggerate, then just don't take it as seriously. Like, it's not that difficult. And Drive to Survive 2 is the other thing is, if you are a Drive to Survive fan and you haven't followed the season, I encourage you to follow the season and become a smarter fan who then can pick up on these things and be like, you know what the interesting thing is? And you can do this next season when you're watching with your friends and you're like, well, actually, I know they're talking about these guys like they hate each other, but they're actually pretty cool. They follow each other on Twitter. Did you know that they stream on Twitch together? Like, you can say those kind of things. And yeah, it's fun. So point is, go watch the show, go get into F1. And,
yeah. Highly recommend the show. It's extremely entertaining. Even if you don't like one, even if you have no interest in following F1, it's just a really, really good, like, documentary series, just in terms of entertainment value.
Yeah. Lot of
because it's all drama. It's all drama. Yeah,
juiciness.
Yeah.
The thing I love about F1 is it's a science sport. Like, so much of it is just about engineering. And about, it's about business, it's about engineering, it's about sports, it's about a bunch of different things. So,
yep.
All right, we'll stop talking because I know it's David Orange kind of hates it when we talk about this stuff.
Boiling hot in the studio right now.
It is. Hold on. Let's look at the temperature.
I mean, little... the temperature is not going to be as impressive as it feels.
Where's my thermometer?
It's right there.
It's 79.2 in here.
Yeah, that's way too hot.
Yeah.
Way too hot.
All right. We'll see you. Right. Hungarian Grand Prix, who's your pick to click?
Max Verstappen.
He's going to bounce back.
Yes.
All right. I think.
Yep.
See you.
All right.
See ya.
See ya.